I can't tell you how good it feels to be back where I started, to be honest. And that's what really sparked the thread on Twitter today, or not even a thread. It's just a bunch of reposts.
The IBC King is back. The
thing is, I'm going to lean into it because we're fixing to make 8 chicken tractors out of IBC totes. Instead of spending $400 on cattle panels and wood, we're going to split three IBC totes will make 2 chicken tractors. And so we're going to make 8 of them. And then I'll still have so many I don't even know what to do with.
Welcome to Thrive in the Future podcast, positive solutions to help you thrive. Homesteading, gardening, community, side hustles, and building skills. Seeds and trees have memory. They thrived and reproduced in a certain climate. Often when you buy chestnut, hazelnut, you have to buy from nurseries in the Northeast or the Pacific Northwest. Those don't do well in Kansas. So go to Grow Nut Trees. I've got hazelnut, I've got mulberry, chestnuts growing for the fall, also got elderberry, all adapted to the Midwest. That's at grownuttrees.com. Do you want to have a side hustle or a business in the regenerative space? I've been taking a permaculture business design course through Regeneration Nation that focuses on your business goals, defining your customer, marketing, and then using the business to design the life you want to live. So check it out. It's on sale now through May 28th. There's a link in the show notes.
Okay, welcome back to Thrive in the Future. I have Grant Payne and Matt with me. We're talking about how the spring is going so far. And so I was just saying that this weekend I'm going to Midwest Prepper Fest here in Northeast Kansas, and Toolman Tim and Nicole Sauce should be there.
No way, really? That's awesome.
Way.
You got plans to, you've interviewed both of those guys, Nicole and Toolman Tim. So do you have plans to like meet up or do anything, or just what if you run into them, you'd run into them?
Yeah, I don't have concrete plans, but when I talked with Tim the last time, he said he'd meet up with me over there. So, that's a good idea.
You're talking about Toolman Tim?
Yeah.
Yeah. I sent him a picture the other day of this car I was behind. You know how like a RAV4 type has like the tire on the back of the car?
Yeah.
Well, it was very visibly shredded. And so I'm like, how's this for preparedness? Like your shredded tire or your spare tire is completely shredded. It's like, and you can't say that you didn't know, right? Because it's not like under the body or in like the trunk. It's you'd have to walk around it getting groceries or whatever. And so like, I thought it was funny. So I sent that to him.
And somebody shred it with a knife or something? Or
no, it just looked like it just got worn out from just like sitting it. I don't know. I don't know what they did.
Yeah. Well, someday I'm going to fix it. So, yeah. You know. Yeah.
Anyways, that'll be cool. You should tell us how it goes.
Yeah. I'm going to take the recorder and see if I can meet up with some folks over there. Mike, the comms guy that has been on the show a couple times, he's over there too doing a class. So, guys, how's spring going so far? What big projects have you been doing?
I like Grant go.
I think the biggest project I've been doing right now is the wedding. So we've been working on the farm, getting it ready since October when we didn't even know we were going to buy it yet, when we would be approved. So that all went through, 2 days after Christmas, and we signed the paperwork before, it's the last week of the year. And so we've just kind of switched everything. I don't know when exactly we decided. I think it was November when we decided when we're going to have the wedding. So we got engaged in November, last November. Wedding is this May. So we are 9 days away. And so we've pretty much been putting everything into wedding prep, making sure we have just everything good to go. It's still, going to be costly, but considering it's a wedding, under $10,000 is good to have, very close people. We're doing it for the dress, the walk, the dance, just those core memories, those pictures that, doing it at the courthouse was like our go-tos, like, that's super easy. Let's just do that. But wait a minute. Let's get these memories, let's have the dress. Let's walk down the aisle. Let's have our dance. For Destiny, it's like, her dance with her grandfather, all that stuff are things that I I want just as much as she wants. You know, I would like the memories because, you know, I don't have, I'm not going to have any new memories with my grandparents. So just those, but we've been doing a lot. We've been taking down trees still. We got the greenhouses up. So we've got the frames laid out for our three greenhouses. And then we've been doing the hostas. So the hostas are really one that and all the other plants we've gotten have been the big time consumer, been hatching out dozens of baby birds. I think we've got 40 baby ducks and another 40 baby chicks we've hatched out this year.
So what are you going to do with all those?
Well, honestly, we're just doing this. So I got these eggs. He got a mixed batch from Murray Hatchery, and he has some very beautiful chickens. So he's like, you know what? Can I have 8 dozen of your eggs, and I'll hatch them out? And so we had a really good success rate that first go around. I think it was actually like 5 dozen because we had an 80% hatch rate of like 33 birds. And, you know, we're going to – because all my flock got decimated by an owl that got inside the chicken coop last year because a piece of tin blew off the roof and devastated all my young chicks. It killed 12 in one night. So we're going to get – and we've just been hatching out a lot of mine that I have left over. I've got genetics from the first chicken I got back in October when I first got chickens again in 2019. You know, when you start getting into home breeding animals, you can really start to see genetics in faces from the roosters and your hens. Like I've got a trait of like deep, solid yellow legs running through my chickens. And I know because I got 2 dozen chickens to start with. They were old, burnout, you know, golden comets that are 2 years old. They were about dead, completely anemic, fixing to die. Got them for $7 a piece. And then raising them back to health. And sometimes they were laying 2-3 eggs a day because I'd go out there every morning and I was
2-3 eggs a day.
I was getting 3-4 dozen eggs a day from 24 birds.
Oh, okay.
So
I was like, what are you pumping?
No, those chickens. I don't know. I was feeding them regular feed.
One chicken does 2-3 eggs a day.
It was absolutely crazy.
Well, some of those, like those Sussex or whatever, can lay 2 eggs a day.
Can they really?
Like, I didn't know they'll burn out. They'll burn out in
right, because it's how many ovum they have, right? It's
Born with the amount of eggs they'll have. So I started breeding with those, and then I still have a little bit of the genetics left. I've lost a lot of chickens just from predators, to be honest, because I like to let them free range, and that goes great for a couple weeks, and then they get in your garden, and they start getting eaten by a neighbor's dog that comes over here. So I don't think I'll have a free range bird again. That's why I'm going really heavily into chicken tractors. Because after the wedding, we're going to be going into hopefully turkey and chicken production. I need to talk to Long Story about going into and doing turkey production. I don't know if it's too late for Thanksgiving or not. But other than that,
maybe they just be smaller, right?
How long does it take to get a turkey up to weight?
I think it could be like 16 weeks.
I think you're probably right. Yeah.
You know, I'm going to turn about 60 of them into a greenhouse. So I'm going to fill them up with raised beds on the outside, put cattle panels over the top, and then put greenhouse plastic over the cattle panels. And then I'll have a greenhouse frame inside where I'll have the ground open so I can till it or do no-till, cover crop it on the inside of the plastic, but then also still grow crops on the outside of the plastic inside the raised beds. So
cool.
By the way, Grant, 16 weeks from now, August 29th, you got time.
Okay. All right. So,
but you don't have them hatched yet, right?
I'm not going to hatch them. I'm just going to buy them. So, and I don't even know if they're backward. I really haven't put terribly too much energy into it for the sole fact of, you know, we're waiting till the wedding is done before we kind of start taking on any huge projects.
Yeah. If you get some, you know, newly hatched turkey chicks, then, it'll be about right. Right.
Yeah. And so
where are you guys going to have your honeymoon? West Palm Beach, Florida?
No, we were actually given a week's stay at a very good friend of my father's beach house in Cape Spring, Coastal, the Gulf of Alabama. Well, I don't know what that's called. Gulf Shores.
Wow. Nice.
That's so great. They told us we could stay for a week. I'm going to take 8 days off of work, and that gives me 12 days consecutive off from work, which, you know,
hell yeah.
It's work. It still drains you, but it's not terrible. You know, it's not hard work. It's not long work. It's, you know, it's just city work. I don't really know how to put it. It's still mentally draining.
It's not hard work. It's city work.
All right. After the wedding, everybody set their watch 10 months from now for.
I was about to say that, but I was like,
okay. I'm going to be honest. I ain't making no promises. I want a kid. That won't hurt me at all. It will probably not please my parents at all. Anytime it gets mentioned, they'll both be like, wait a couple years, you know. So. Only thing a child will do is make me grind harder, and I'm already in it enough.
I can't imagine what that looks like.
Yeah,
I cannot. Like
me, yeah.
Is that dial go to 12? I don't know.
The thing is that dial will turn to 12 because if I'm already going at the rate I'm going now, which I'm already being encouraged to slow down and to stop getting so many totes. I've got to pick four more up. I've already got to pick four more up tomorrow morning.
Sorry. I was thinking about like Totes Anonymous or something like that. My name's Grant. I'm addicted to totes.
But see, the thing is, I am because it's a free resource that, you know, I can turn into so many different things. Grant.
And we're still in awe of that because totes around here back in 2020 cost $110. Yeah. And they weren't that great, and they didn't have, you know, like they didn't have the outlets and stuff on them. It's like,
yeah, the bulkheads. Yeah.
Yeah. I cut up a bunch of them, but see, I'm at the point now. So I have maximized my weights for these pallets. So the frames I cut up totes for waters at the farm. I've cut two 275 gallon totes in half. So the cows and goats have four waterers, just so it's just four reservoirs of water. So when we go, I check on them once a week.
So like troughs or what?
They're basically water troughs. But when I cut them in half, I get a garden bed out of one half, a trough out of the other half. And then we have this pallet we don't know what to do with. And eventually we're going to get enough pallets and turn those pallets into makeshift tables for the greenhouse. So there'll be level drainage that you can sterilize.
Yep. Yep.
Nice.
Yeah, you saw that article from Shudra on how he uses totes for aquaponics, right?
Yeah, I did. That's one thing I want to get into. I still believe that things should grow in dirt. But, you know, when it comes to it, you know, if you can have a self-sufficient aquaponic system with crawfish or, you know, brim, you know, go for it. If we get to the point we're all prepping for, it doesn't matter where your food comes from. You just need calories. I've dropped $400 on cover crop already this year, you know, $600 on hay, and the hay input is, it's to feed the cows, but it's at the same point. It's to put back into the pasture. There are bare spots under trees. I've been cutting like dozens of cherry trees down every time I go up to the farm. Cause goats can eat cherry trees. Cows can eat cherry trees as long as leaves are still green. So I cut the trees a specific way. So when they fall, it splits the entire trunk of the tree when it falls, and it stays alive because it's connected to the root system. So they won't wither. They won't die.
I just sent a couple of tweets about this. It's hedge laying is what they call it. It's not coppicing. It's not pollarding. Yep. They take like a C-section out of the tree. Mm-hmm. Have it drop, still connected, like you're saying, Grant.
I follow a bunch of guys from Ireland and stuff who do that. And then
that's funny. I always follow some guys in the UK about that too.
Yeah, it's the cops worker dude. We probably follow the same guy.
Probably.
I figured this out. Just, you know, how can I make sure these trees stay alive? Because I cleared about an acre last year because I didn't know we were moving, and I cleared a whole acre last year. I'm cutting trees down, feeding them the goats. We go on every day after work. with the sawzall, because I wouldn't even whip out the chainsaw. I was doing it with battery powered saw, knocking these trees down. The goats are going crazy. The thing is, when you leave them still attached, they'll eat on it, and then next year it'll regrow. So if you're running them through forest, depending on how you have it set up, it's like if you were to pollard or coppice a stump, which I'm pollarding the cherry tree stumps, like about waist high, because they're going to put back out and so they're going to explode.
Yeah.
But if I was to leave them attached, you know, like with, I have some hickories that I cut down, they're putting back out now and they're still laying sideways on the ground.
Nice.
But that gets in the way of grass. I mean, there's no reason, in my opinion, to leave it down, coppice it, it'll just keep putting out until eventually the root system dies out, which it's done its job. It's given them, it's brought minerals from deeper in the surface up to the top of the surface and bringing more biomass and just more things for the animals to eat, for more manure, yada, yada.
I want to do that on the downhill side of my property. Like, I live on a hill, so like it slopes down and then like it really drops off going into an irrigation ditch. But I don't own that. I don't own that slope. So I'd have to get in contact with, I think it's my neighbor that owns that part, or like the irrigation district. I don't really know, but I got to figure that out, because
hey, water makes you the owner. All I got to do is just, if it runs down, then it's okay.
Yeah, I wish people get shot over water here. That's the first, at when Montana became a state, that was the first recorded state death was over water rights. So we take it seriously.
And that's one thing with us. We have a branch that runs through the property, and I think, you know what? We will be completely screwed. That's what I'm going to turn the totes into, water silos, like water towers. With an automatic collection system, like a funnel on top of them. Mm-hmm. But if someone were to come through and dam up the creek or the branch all the way up, you know, you're going to have to go, you're going to have to fight to clear that dam out. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You're just not going to have any water.
You could get a ram pump.
Yeah.
He's talking about upstream on somebody else's land. Yeah,
right. Upstream. But I mean, instead of like trying to funnel something from the top, you could.
But the good thing is, there is a spring that feeds it on the backside of my grandmother's property, so it gets fed from our property. So we will have some source of water.
That's good.
So that, but at the same time, it's in wetlands. Technically, it's got. I don't know if it's wetlands or flood zone, whichever. But I want to do some makeshift ponds. And even if it's not a pond, even if it's just like technically like a swale or whatever, my grandmother's like, why would you do that? That's so stupid. What's it? But my granddad, my dad tried to put a pond here and it never worked. I'm like, okay, that's fine. But it's great trying to bring in the older generations into this new old style of lifestyle, because you're not trying to put every seed in the ground just so you can get by. Because when I talk about how I'm gonna, you know, manage the land and manage the animals for the land, she's like, my daddy raised cows on here, blah 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 blah. I'm like, I understand that, but you had to do it this way because you had to make it or you didn't, you know. And we're trying to work backwards to have, like, you know, to a more agrarian lifestyle, that you have a lower or smaller standard of living, like Guy Alaska does. He has an extremely small standard of living. And it's very hard to get that across sometimes to people.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's, you know, because it's counterintuitive, and also it's, you know, it's against the grain.
Mm-hmm.
So Matt, what about you? What have you been doing this spring?
What's the big man project? I've been playing catch up. I was stuck in Utah for 3 weeks for work. So when I came back, I really hit the ground running. Thankfully, we don't have our chickens. We got rid of those in January. Just like, I'm up. I don't want these right now. Don't have time for them right now. So that was a good move. And so we've been implementing our design from William Horvath's permaculture apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with him and I got a design. And so we're putting all our garden beds in the backyard. Barely anything grows back there anyways, other than, you know, weeds. Like when I got here, there was like, it was just rock, like rock and dirt, no topsoil. And now there's like, just like a little bit of topsoil. I mean, not bad for 5 years later, or however long it's been, but
shameless I'm plug.
Were those raised beds pressure treated wood?
Mine?
Is it? Yeah.
No, it's no. They're just, it's like, they're old deck boards, so I'm sure they're just like pine or something like that.
Are you going to try to seal them in with some sort of outdoor sealer to help prevent rot?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. It's so dry here that I'm not really worried about it.
Because, you know, if I was to build something like that, it'd dry out in 2-3 years.
Yeah.
But here's
the bottom probably rot out, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
That's one thing I'm worried about with using totes as garden beds is if they'll dry rot. One thing I'm kind of worried about is them dry rotting over time. But eventually I'm going to frame them in with like cedar decking boards, which are like $2 a piece, extremely cheap. But one thing that I've noticed, you talk about your soil, you're building topsoil. I love it. But I've noticed that there is almost zero life at the farm. There's nothing decomposing the cow pies. There is an insane amount of flies, which I'm going to have to – I've never really had to deal with cows and flies. So I'm going to have to deal with that. But there's nothing is decomposing the cow pies. There's like no decomposers. There's a ton of predators. There are a ton of praying mantis, you know, eggs everywhere. But when the grasses grown up high, like inside the only thing that's getting really tall in the back pasture is goldenrod, which, you know, that's pretty high protein. So we're going to use that for the pasture poultry until it eventually dies. But there's just no active soil life to break.
Are you going to have to chase the cows?
Your compost pile or in your pasture?
In the pasture. I mean, we're going into, you know, almost the middle of May, and there's nothing breaking down these cow pies, which is, you know, it's good soil. It's got really good grass. I'm starting with an incredible foundation, but I feel like as soon as I start to manage it properly, it's going to explode because the grass is already, you know, we bush hogged it. You know, it's knee high. It's got really good clumping fescue. We're going to probably change that out into a different type of fescue over time. But I got all this cover crop to put in of, you know, chicory and plantains and trefoil, all those things that will hopefully self-seed and are kind of perennial to build that topsoil. You know, I got a clover mix with 4 different types of clover. And so that's one thing.
You just ordered 40,000 pounds of milpa or whatever?
No, they gave me 35 pounds of milpa for the first acre program. So I'm going to work with local churches. There's this farmer's market that I was invited to up north of me, and she has a Feed the Needy program. So she will come and I can donate it to her since she already has the roadways and pathways connected to get this produce to places. If not, I'll work with the local church food bank that I've spoken to the pastor about. I'm very tempted to ask for another second pound because I'd like to work with the local Boys and Girls Club for a pickup, you know, and just kind of send it in and really, I really want to hit the community hard when I start doing something with the greenhouse. I want to get with the extension office and hold classes on how to plant tomato seeds and how to do things. You know, I was thinking the other day, teaching animal husbandry classes to, you know, children through the local 4-H and FFA programs, you know, coming out, having rabbits, having chickens, having ducks, and pretty much teaching them the rundown of care and maintenance and everything like that. And in turn, that gives me more knowledge about the animals by putting in the time and research to teach it to someone else.
I was going to say, Grant, back to your cow with the flies problem. I mean, you're already planning on doing chicken tractors. You're just gonna have to chase the cows with chicken tractors, break up them cow pies, right?
Yeah, and that's the goal. That's the idea. But right now they're on an acre and a half. It's two cows and like 13 goats. The grass is still really great. They scream every time they see me because they're grain hungry. But the grass is growing at an incredible rate. Like there's still plenty of grass. I'm cutting trees down. I'm feeding them. They have hay. So I make sure they're fed. When they get moved to the rest of the like 8 acres, we're going to put them on. I'm going to worm everybody. And then I'm going to sow everything they're in. That's where the cover crop's going to be. And nothing is going to go back on that acre till winter. Because I want everything to grow and go to seed this year on that paddock. So I'm not really going to be worried about it once the cover crop starts going in over it. That or I'll put the milpa crop there. I've got to have ideas where I'm going to put these things, but that is the goal, is to chase. Once we have the, I don't like temporary fencing. So we're just going to hard fence everything into the paddocks and then into like 6 paddocks and then have smaller fencing within those paddocks. So if they do bust through it, oh, they're just in the other side.
How come you don't like hard fencing?
No, I do like hard fencing. I don't like temporary.
Oh, I'm sorry. I spoke wrong.
There is a learning curve to it, but I really don't want to risk it because the position we're in right now is we're not up there all the time. We're not living there yet. We will be soon. But if I do temporary fencing, it will be a hard temporary fencing. Like I've got an idea to link together cattle panels and then shovel those cattle panels around and do things like that. And because we run the goats and cows together, so they graze at different levels. And temporary fencing for goats when you have high forage is a little bit different than cows, because cows need one strand of hot wire about chest high, and goats need like a lot more than that.
A solid wall of electricity.
Yeah. So it really comes down to the goats to see what they do. And I'm going to have to learn a lot about grass. I don't know a lot about grass yet. So that's why I got cows. I really jumped the gun. I got two cows. They both cost about $600, and I could probably turn around and sell those cows now for about $15. They are incredible cows, beautiful cows. Really good looking cows. But what we're looking to do is just going South Pole. Teddy Ginger created the breed. It's a smaller bodied cow. So as you build your soil, as you build your pasture, they're smaller frame. So you get more meat per acre and you can stock more cows per acre than if we were running Angus, because that breed has been selectively bred and designed to go to feedlots. And that's what it is. You can grain feed an Angus all day or grass feed an Angus all day. That's fine. But if you grass fed something that is meant to be grass fed, like Dexter's, other specifically raised on and finished on grass, it's genetics. It all comes down to genetics. And that is the breed we decided to go with for cows. But you can get a South Pole bull and cross it with almost anything. You can cross it with a Corriente, any type of cow, and it spits out basically a 90% South Pole every single time. The genetics are extremely strong and they're beautiful.
You mix it with a bison. That would be sweet.
Well, I would like bison. I bet it'd be easier for me to get emus before I get a bison,
Get emus? I've seen more emus this year than ever in my life.
Emu meat is a red meat. It's like a cow chicken. That's pretty much I'd say what it is. It's a red meat.
Have you ever had pigeon? Chicken. That is a very red meat.
I wouldn't mind raising pigeons. Like, I want an apiary with peacocks. I would like to start doing. There is a hunting club that requires pheasants, and if I can get into growing out, you know, hunting size pheasants, that's another market.
Yeah, a lot of times you need like a game bird license to do that crap.
I don't know about here. I really don't. Like, but yeah, I had a guy come to me.
Still know about that. Never heard about that in my life. That's weird.
There's apparently a duck shortage right now. And so a guy came to me, you know, bought a couple of my ducks, and he's like, can you get me 30 ducks more? Park?
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
No wonder there's a duck shortage.
He needs about 30 more because the hatcheries are euthanizing all the birds because the duck flu or the avian
flu. The duck flu. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Because the avian flu. And I'm like, that's manufactured nonsense. I didn't say that. I'm like, now I'm thinking, okay, how do I get my hands on 30 mature ducks that I can sell for $15 a piece? Because that's a week's pay right there. Mm. So it's most likely not going to happen, but the avenues are there. Yeah. The opportunities are there.
You should be able to go. They should obey you when you go to catch them.
Don't say that, because I saw a mated pair of geese and they're not Canadian geese. They're like brown, like a reddish brown, white pair of mated geese at this local pond. And there are dozens of ducks, and they look like mallards. I don't know if they're mallards because I don't know if it's time for them to be back yet. I'm not a duck hunter, but yes, I would most definitely go out there with a net and catch some ducks.
Get a butterfly net and whatever fishing net.
Oh yes, I'll wait till I have more seniority before I start going and catching some ducks.
Yeah, looks like these ducks here, they're a big problem. We need to get rid of them. Just throw them in my truck.
These are abandoned ducks that have been domesticated, and they are in a native environment. Yeah. I really want to make friends with the local county, you know, animal control
dude.
Yeah. and stuff like that, because he just, you know, I'll take free ducks home. I've learned my lesson again. Is I made a sale with goats, and I included the value of pigs in it. They're not worth it. And you know what I mean?
The pigs aren't worth it.
I still have three potbelly pigs I'm trying to get rid of, and nobody wants. I put up some. I had eight people wanting, you know, baby pigs. I ended up getting some and nothing. I've almost debated on taking them to the farm and throwing them out, see what happens. I'll castrate them first, of course.
Why can't you just eat them?
They're about the size of my shoe.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
I could eat them. True. Very true. I could skin them like a squirrel.
Donate them to a high school. They can do dissection class.
I feel like the school has to go through certain.
Yeah, they do. They're always like, you know,
I just show up with four dead pigs in the back of my truck. Say, hey, kid, you want a pig?
It's okay. I work for the city.
I got so many sound bites out of this episode. It's great. Emu is a cow chicken.
They basically are. They're like, that's what Fuddruckers is. That's their whole thing, is ostrich burgers.
What?
No,
I did not know that.
Y'all don't. Yeah, do you know what Fuddruckers is?
I'm aware of what Fuddruckers is.
To Fuddruckers and get an ostrich burger.
Didn't know they had that on their menu. I haven't been to Fuddruckers in 25 years.
They closed down all the Fuddruckers near us. That was the best burger place I've ever been to. Hmm. I miss my ostrich burgers on a Sunday after church. I do. They're fantastic.
Hmm.
Well, you probably had to eat there more than once a week for them to stick around. So that's probably what happened there.
Yeah.
What about you, Scott? King. Plans?
Oh, most of my spring has been working with trees, and I significantly increased my tree work. And then...
You inspire me to want to just get into trees and just crush it. I feel like next year when the state forestries open up for purchase, I'm going to buy 100 of each native tree and just go.
Yeah, you got to be careful because they have the disclaimer that you shouldn't sell them. So, you know, what I that's the face. But yeah. Yeah, so the
if the State Forestry Department of Pennsylvania wants to come at me in Georgia for selling trees for interstate commerce or whatever, like, come on. I mean,
yeah, so what I did was I keep them and grow them on my land till the fall, and then they're my trees. I adapted them to my land.
Exactly. But, yeah. You would want to grow them out for a couple years.
I went and bought hazelnuts from Iowa, from the Iowa Conservation, right? And they were $1. So I'm thinking they're going to be dinky like this. They were so huge that they is like the roots were wide as a 30 gallon trash can.
Holy crap. What did you do with them?
And they're like 4 feet long. And I'm like, holy crap. For $1 each.
Wow.
So then I planted a bunch of them. And then the small ones I put in 5 gallon buckets. And then I sold some of them. But yeah, I was just like, you know, these are too big for me to ship. They're too big for me to get in a pot. And I put them all in a 30 gallon trash can with a bunch of dirt. And then little by little took them out and, you know,
do you buy your pots wholesale?
No. And then, yeah, that's the big thing that I learned this year was I was buying them from, Home Depot, or I was using, my 2 gallon pots or 2 gallon buckets. Right. So I drill holes in the 2 gallon buckets, but, I got hooked up with Greenhouse Warehouse. That's it. And so I can get the pots for $1. So I got 65 pots for $65.
That's pretty much, that's a good price. I was going to say, I've got a couple, you know, I ended up buying a pallet of material from a farm supply store in Pennsylvania because I couldn't get a CocoCort or horticultural peat perlite. At such a good price. So it was even cheaper with a $400 shipping fee. And it's like, how is this possible? Like, all this stuff comes from China.
Well, that's right.
How can I not? They had to deliver it on a semi. But it was, you know, I got ordered about 9 yards of material on a pallet.
Mm-hmm.
So the Coco Core, they're 10 pound bricks. I got 16 10 pound bricks. And that will expand into, I think, 2.7 cubic yards. And then the horticultural bags of perlite come in about 4 cubic yards. Add mini pine nuggets to it. You have a bare bones complete nursery mix. And it's pretty much a 30% split of each. You can add a bag of black cow per, you know, whatever that for nutrients, or if you use a slow release.
Right. Yeah, that 10-10-10 mixture you recommended, I've been using that, and that's been really good.
What is it?
A little pelleted.
Osmocote.
I don't know if that's what it's called, but something similar to that.
And is then, it like a slow release fertilizer in balls?
Yeah, it looks like little pellets.
Yeah. Okay. Are they yellow?
They're different colors. Anyway, but that, yeah, so I got some of that, and that really, like, especially on the grafted apples. So I grafted some apples, and they usually burn out right about now. And all of a sudden they've been going like gangbusters.
Nice.
I've been selling more stuff on Facebook Marketplace. Mm-hmm. So I sold $72 worth of elderberry this evening. So yeah.
Have you gone into getting different varieties of elderberry? Like, sure. there's a neon elderberry at a store. It's grown locally, but it's a neon yellow leaf color elderberry.
Oh, I'd like to see that. So I'm branching out into black lace elderberry.
Okay.
And so they have black leaves. They also have like greenish black leaves, but they're thin and almost Japanese looking.
Okay.
Yeah. So they're cool.
Still produce fruit.
Yeah, and then they have to get some of those from, and then they have weirdo pink flowers instead of having the white flowers. So they're really, really cool.
Just for a landscaping purpose, I'm going to have to get that. My goal is by the time I'm 60, I want to have a botanical garden on the farm.
Yep, that's my goal, and I ain't got that long until I'm 60. So, you know.
But it's like, you know, like with these hosses, you know, the goal for these hosses, the hustle for these hosses is I got them for $4 a piece.
Uh-huh.
They were marked for $25 a piece. I got them home. I doubled the size of their pot, gave them slow-release fertilizer, and got them going. And they look beautiful. They look better than they did when the store got them.
Yeah. So the thing is, you got to do is you've got to get stuff that maybe some other people don't have, right? So you've got something there you can tell the story about, mm-hmm. and then they're not going to argue with you on price because they're not going to say, "Hey, yeah. I can go down to Home Depot and get this elderberry." Nobody has black lace elderberry. So you're going to get a premium price for it, right?
That's like another comfrey seeds. Like you, like you sell comfrey to somebody. What do you even use comfrey for? And you give them whatever the list mm-hmm. you use comfrey for, you know, because there's a lot of people going for that, you know, permaculture perennial mindset.
Yep.
And when you get to that, you can put a dollar sign on it because it's more intensive, it's more labor, it's more time because it's a perennial crop. I'm going to start doing asparagus from seed, starting like 120, and this is just for me, starting like 120 crowns of asparagus a year just for myself.
Horseradish. They don't, no place around here sells horseradish.
Yeah, there's a farm in Montana that I've debated on buying horseradish from. Rhubarb. Apparently rhubarb is a perennial thing.
Yep, it is.
I'm like, and so there's all these things. I'm like, okay, all you got to do is rhizome farm these things. So get mm-hmm. a ditch witch, dig a trench, fill it in full of compost, mound the clay back on top, mulch the top so you have these nice Hugo culture style mounds, but they're just solid dirt. Plant them down, and that will grow incredible.
The comfrey, you can dig the comfrey up. You can dig a whole crown up, and there's still enough left down in the ground where it's going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take – you've seen those crowns. Oh, did you get the comfrey I sent you? It's on its way.
I have not.
Okay, so it's got some huge crown in there. You know, I mean, the crown's like this is big in my head.
Can you – is that Russian comfrey?
It's not – it's bocking. It's the not, you know, it's the sterile kind.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, because everybody's worried about comfrey, like going crazy and pollinating all over the place.
Okay. And well, I'll make sure to keep yours separate because mine, I've got comfrey seeds that I've started.
Yep.
And that's come, I accidentally threw them into some recycled dirt that I repotted stuff up in. You know, I've got comfrey coming up in four or five different buckets.
Well, you would have that even with the bakken kind. I mean, basically any little sliver of the thing, it comes back.
Well, true, but these are just seeds.
Yeah. That's crazy. And then if you tell the story about it, then it's going to set you apart, you know? So, I mean, if I say on the website, hey, I got elderberry and hazelnut, Somebody is going to argue with me that they can get hazelnut over there in Pennsylvania for cheaper and they don't have to pay all my shipping. Okay, great. That's nice. And then, but my story is that it's impossible to get hazelnut to grow here unless you adapt it to the Midwest. So mine's adapted to the Midwest and everybody argues about how big the Midwest is. So therefore
it's the whole country.
Ohio thinks they're the Midwest. I mean, you know, some people in Pennsylvania think they're the Midwest. So, you know,
that's like, I can't push hostas and daylilies and canna lilies because all of those things are completely edible from the leaves and flowers and tubers.
Yeah. So
if I can get, you know, along with the comfrey and the, you know, sunchokes and all these other perennial semi-native crops, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to get into some of the perennial natives as well. It's going to be a very niche. My niche is going to be everything the box store will never have, essentially. Yep.
And that's the niche. So, that's the niche you want to have. Niche, whatever you want to call
it. And it's like, you know, the box store is never going to carry, you know, this, or this. Or with the hostas, the goal is to June 1st, once the wedding's over, we're back from the honeymoon, I'm going to make a Facebook post and saying these hostas are available for this price. We're going to keep, I think, about three of each variety we have. We have 24 different varieties, and we're going to plan them, and we're going to get into basically rhizome farming. And that's with everything I get. We're going to do bulb farming, and just there's no reason not to.
So I think I accidentally went crazy and I bought like 300 pecan seeds from the state. And then so I planted them all out.
Yeah.
So I like put them in buckets. I put them, you know, you're supposed to put two in each one. And I mean, but I sold every single pecan I had last year. So, you know, I'm like, hey.
See, that's where you're doing stuff like that. And I'm like, man, I need to be doing stuff like that. I got to step up my game to actually start selling things. Cause I'm essentially pitter pattering here and there.
No, you got your mums. You went crazy on mums last year.
I did. And I sold most of them. But you know, it really getting a job put into perspective how much I was actually making on my side hustle. Last year, I sold about $2,000 in plants from the school, and that's all I was living on was what I was hustling off of. I didn't have a job. I hadn't had a job for like a year and a half until I started working again. I'm like, man, an hourly wage sucks because I'm hired in at 16 an hour, but I'm making 13.
But then you were like taking all the discards.
Yeah, and then that's. That's pretty much where all this came from, and then cuttings and all that. And they gave me the trees I took the cuttings from. So, mm-hmm. You know.
So I did this with elderberry. I, you know, the elderberry is like growing through the fence, stuff that's already here. So I went and I dug up the runners, you know, the sprouts, stuck them in a pot. I took the cuttings, stuck them in water, and then stuck them in a pot. And, you know, I've got like, I think I have 50 some elderberry in pots ready to go.
Well, that's fantastic.
What was your mix for soil? You got 30, 30, 30 perlite coconut core. So
it's basically
core.
A third what was the other perlite thing? coconut core and pine nugget, mini pine nuggets.
Mini pine nuggets.
Yes. It's basically just pine bark nuggets that have been shredded into mini chunks.
Oh, okay.
It's neutral. When pine starts breaking down, people's like, oh, it'll change the pH. It doesn't. It composts down. Pine does not make your anyway.
Because I go over and I get the compost by the truckload, but it's municipal compost and it's been hit or miss on residual. Mm-hmm. Herbicide, especially the ones from Kansas City. So I could tell when the nursery got the got their compost from Kansas City Municipal Source, mm-hmm. because you know where they're spraying trees and stuff, then that's, you know, that's ended up in the compost.
Yeah, that's kind of why I'm weary. Like the city uses the stuff I get from them, and it's basically this pile of compost that has been smoking for the last 4 years, and it's as big as a house, and it's black, it's rich, but they put it around every single tree they plant. So I feel like it's safe to use around non-edible plants, which is what I'm gonna do because I get it for free. Like
these folks around here, they do something and they speed it up.
It's premium. It is premium compost, but there's shredded boots in it, there's glass in it. Yeah. Not a lot. But I found a whole shoe. It's not a ton of stuff, but it's enough trash that I would not grow vegetables in it, but I'd put it around flowers.
Yeah, well, we've got twist ties, you know, because somebody took their leaf waste over to the place in a bag with twist ties. There's little pieces of microplastic in it.
Is microplastic, honestly, realistically, going to get up into the root of the plant?
No.
And then go from the leaf of the plant into the fruit of the plant.
No.
And then I don't buy it. I feel like that is just another scare tactic.
Yeah, I just don't like having plastic in my soil. Oh, I mean, I got enough plastic in my soil just from using cardboard.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I took the tape off as much as I can, but I still find plastic that, comes up.
You know what sucks is when you use the wrong type of plastic for greenhouse plastic and it gets brittle and shatters like glass. That happened to me.
Really? Because you'll never get that out of anything.
I thought about vacuuming it and I'm like, no. This is just going to be here now.
At that point, it's not worth it. And it sucks because there's plastic in everything, mm-hmm. And I would like, but unless you are 100% making the soil yourself, you can't always, I get soil for my raised beds in bulk, by the scoop. Like I've put 40 yards of dirt in those things. It doesn't look like there's plastic in there, but those boards, some of that wood chip they use is probably mulch pressure treated boards. That there's some things in there that are probably a little sketchy, but I am not going to doubt the healthy microbiome and mushroom and fungus in the soil. Cause I feel like when you discredit the soil, when you be like, it can't handle it.
I still have the mushroom compost blooming mm-hmm. in the garage from February. I've eaten mushrooms off of there like 5 times.
That's all right, what do you guys want to wrap up with? Because I'm going to go in about 5 minutes. I'm going to get to work building raised beds.
Okay.
Whatever y'all want to.
Well, yeah, shameless plug. Matt likes the Permaculture Apprentice Permaculture course by William Horvath. And you can check out the link in the show notes. Thank you guys for being on.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you're welcome, Scott. Thanks for having us.
You bet.
Good catching up.
Hey, if you like this episode, leave us a tip on Venmo or Cash App at Thriving the Future. Or join the Patreon, patreon.com/thrivingthefuture. You get early episodes and you get extras. Thank you. Check out Thriving News. That's where Perpin and I share longer form articles about homesteading, mindset, milpa gardening, food forest, etc. Go check it out at thrivingnews.com. Thank you for listening to Thrive in the Future podcast. If you like what you hear, please click that like or subscribe button in your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter @ThriveInTheFute and also go to thriveinthefuture.com.